pear tree. The elder was waiting for a southerly wind before bursting into bloom, but the tightly closed buds of the limes still offered cover for lovemaking to the chaffinches, busily employed in building their lichen-covered nest between trunk and branch. No human foot had trod the gravel path since last winter's snow had melted, and the free and easy life of beasts and flowers was left undisturbed. The sparrows industriously collected all manner of rubbish and stowed it away under the tiles of the navigation school. They burdened themselves with scraps of the rocket cases of last autumn's fireworks and picked the straw covers off the young trees transplanted from the nursery in the deer park only a year ago. Nothing escaped them. They discovered shreds of muslin in the summer arbors. The splintered leg of a seat supplied them with tufts of hair left on the battlefield by dogs which had not been fighting there since Josephine's day. What a life it was! The sun was standing over the Lilia home, throwing sheaves of rays towards the east. The rays pierced the columns of smoke at Bergson, flashed across the Ritterford, climbed to the cross of the Ritterholm's church, flung themselves onto the steep roof of the German church opposite, toyed with the bunting displayed by the boats on the pontoon bridge, sparkled in the windows of the chief custom house, illuminated the woods of the lighting island, and died away in a rosy cloud far, far away in the distance where the sea was. And from thence the wind came and traveled back by the same way, over Vaxholm, past the fortress, past the custom house, and along Sickla Island, forcing its way in behind the Haster home, glancing at the summer resorts, then out again and on to the hospital Daniken. There it took fright, and dashed away in a headlong career along the southern shore, noticing the smell of coal, tar, and fish oil, came dead against the city quay, rushed up to the Moses height, and swept into the garden, and buffeted against the wall. The wall was opened by a maidservant, who, at the very moment, was engaged in peeling off the paper pasted over the chinks of the double windows. A terrible smell of dripping, beer drags, pine needles, and sawdust poured out, and was carried away by the wind, while the maid stood breathing the fresh air through her nostrils. The wind plucked the cotton wool, strewn with barberry berries, tinsel, and rose leaves, from the space between the windows, and danced it along the paths, joined by sparrows and chaffinches, who saw here the solution of their greater part of their housing problem. Meanwhile, the maid continued her work at the double windows. In a few minutes, the door leading from the restaurant stood open, and a man, well but plainly dressed, stepped out into the garden. There was nothing striking about his face beyond a slight expression of care and worry, which disappeared as soon as he had emerged from the stuffy room and caught sight of the wide horizon. He turned to the side from whence the wind came, opened his overcoat, and repeatedly drew a deep breath, which seemed to relieve his heart and lungs. Then he began to stroll up and down the barrier, which separated the garden from the cliffs in the direction of the sea. Far below him lay the noisy, reawakening town. The steam cranes whirred in the harbor. The iron bars rattled in the iron weighing machine. The whistles of the lockkeeper shrilled. The steamers at the pontoon bridge smoked. The omnibuses rumbled over the uneven paving stones. Noise and uproar in the fish market, sails and flags on the water outside, the screams of the seagulls, bugle calls from the dockyard, the turning out of the guard, the clattering of the wooden shoes of the working men, all this produced an impression of life and bustle, which seemed to rouse the young man's energy. His face assumed an expression of defiance, cheerfulness, and resolution, and, as he leaned over the barrier and looked at the town below, he seemed to be watching an enemy. His nostrils expanded, his eyes flashed, and he raised his clenched fist as if he were challenging or threatening the poor town. The bells of St. Catherine's chimed seven. The splenetic treble of St. Mary seconded. The basses of the great church and the German church joined in, and soon the air was vibrating with the sound made by the seven bells of the town. Then, one after the other, relapsed into silence, until far away in the distance only the last one of them could be heard, singing its peaceful, even song.